O God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight. O God, our strength and our redeemer. Amen. There's a moral and theological risk particular to the church. I don't mean this church in particular, I mean the church. And this particular risk comes to us because we have grown out of a whole distinct religion, out of a whole other religion, out of Judaism. The moral risk particular to Christianity is to look at the stories of the Old Testament, to look at the history of the Jewish people, and to decide that those things, they're really all about me. They're really all about me. I mean me as an archetype. You know, I mean, I am very much a Gentile. It's tougher to get more Gentile than me. My people, they came from the British Isles, and in the era of the great stories of the Bible, my people were out making giant stone calendars. We were being polytheists, you know, we were working on Gentile stuff. There's a moral risk to Christianity that says that all of the actions of God in the Old Testament were really pointing toward Jesus, and that Jesus was really about God's true aim of being my God personally. The story, that story, would go a little bit like this, that God created humankind and then chose the people of Israel who rejected God. The people became enslaved, so God sent Moses to liberate them. Yep. Still, Israel rejected God. So God sent the prophets, rejected. God sent God's own son, rejected. And now, the promises that God made to this one people, they are available to all people. The moral risk is to say, this was God's plan all along, to become the God of all people, for me personally. It is an old, old moral risk. So much so that it is being addressed directly by Paul in the book of Romans, which is one of the earliest books of the Bible. This is from the very beginning a problem. Paul is a Jewish man who had converted to Christianity, and then he made his life's mission to spread the gospel to the Gentiles. It was his life's work to declare to all people, even us large stone calendar enthusiasts, to declare that the God of Israel was their God to make real Christ's command to go and baptize, to make disciples of all nations, of all nations. So if anybody would seem prone to this moral risk of saying that God's actions towards Israel are just a prelude to God's true aim, if anyone is prone to that risk, it would be Paul. But Paul is at great pains to avoid this. The whole of chapter 11 of the book of Romans is an answer to this, trying to hew a close path towards what is the relationship that God has to the Israelite people and to Christ. Paul argues that the Gentiles, they are in fact a part of the people of God, but Gentiles are not the center, not the purpose. Paul imagines that the people of God are being like a vast and thriving olive tree, one that has been cultivated carefully for many years. And through storms and vagaries of fate, some branches have broken off. And God, who is tending the olive tree, goes to work, dealing with the broken off branches. God goes and finds wild olive trees, cuts living branches from them, and then brings them back to the olive grove. There, God does some tree surgery, which is its literal name, by the way. God does some tree surgery. God opens up the branch of the cultivated olive tree and grafts in the living branch of this wild olive tree. And this wild olive branch, it keeps living. It grows on the new tree. It is fed by the sap of the new tree. It is fed by the root of this, and it can thrive on this new tree. So this olive tree with some branches of its own and some wild olive branches that have been grafted in, are they the same tree now? Kind of. But the grafted in branch is still whatever kind of olive tree it came from. So if you had most of the branches growing Kalamata olives, and then this other wild one is growing green Castrovano olives, that grafted in branch is still going to be growing green olives in the midst of all of these other olives being dark, black, rich olives. It's a little weird, but that's trees for you. Anyway, Paul says that the Gentiles, they are like this green olive branch growing on this Kalamata black olive tree. And as a green olive, as a grafted in branch, I should not say, well, these Kalamatas, they are just old news, old hat, Old Testament. I'm the real reason for this whole tree. It's just not true. God's care is for the whole of the tree. God's love for the thriving of the whole is why I got grafted in the first place. A broken branch just left alone, it's gonna scar over, producing nothing. And the rich fruits will be lessened. Instead, God grafts in living branches like this to ensure the vibrancy and diversity of the whole tree, all thriving, though not the same, fed from a common source, bearing fruit, though not all the same. Now, this admittedly elaborate tree metaphor from Paul. This is how Paul addresses this old and persistent moral risk that the church faces. As a Christian, I must remember and recognize that, yes, I do have a place in the household of God by baptism. I do have a place in the people of God, but that doesn't make me the first and only and highest. That's not what being a part of the people of God is about at all. It is about the vibrancy and diversity of the whole olive tree. I am a branch. Jesus Christ is the root and the trunk. I may, by God's grace, be part of this living tree, but I am not the point of the whole thing. And this moral risk, it runs counter to Christ's command, in which Christ says, go and baptize all nations. To demand that I only would be the center, it is to try to undo that work, to make it not of all nations, but of one thing, me. Christ has commanded to go and make disciples of all nations. To demand that I am the center is to undo that work. And this moral risk, this old moral risk of viewing myself as the center, it's a moral risk that still dogs the church today, though changed. It shifts and changes. It still stays with us. It's there from the very beginning. And today, one expression of this old moral risk, which is always of the failure of assuming that I am at the center instead of Christ, an expression of this old moral risk is the idea that the Christian church is predominantly a white European endeavor. Now, that story would go a little bit like this. From Paul's mission to the Gentiles came the church in Greece and Rome. And that spread across Europe and over the North Sea to my people. Big stone calendars were replaced. The church flourished. From there, missionaries departed to foreign fields, spreading the gospel across the world. In this telling, the white European church is the center, will always be the center. The problem with this is it's just not true. The vast majority of Christians living in the world today don't look like me. The vast majority of Christians living throughout the world today are, in fact, people of color and have always been. That's always been true. The oldest Christian communities outside of Israel itself are in Ethiopia. By the time that the Gospels were recorded and written down, there was already thriving Ethiopian Christian communities. That's just the truth. The truth is that St. Augustine, one of the fathers of the Christian faith, St. Augustine was a black man of Berber origin in North Africa. He was a black man who has been literally whitewashed, painted as a white man. The most powerful public theologian living today is William Barber, a black man with a chronic illness. He is not only a powerful preacher and advocate, but also perhaps the country's most gifted living teacher of history. The most influential theological movement of the last century, these are liberation theology and womanist theology, written with fierce and beautiful fire by authors such as Mercy Amba Odoyuye, Yvonne Gabara, Emily Towns, and Katie Cannon. The fastest growing Christian movement in the world is Pentecostalism, as it's practiced in South America and Africa. White Christians are not the center of the Christian faith. That's okay. It's always an old moral risk to think that I am at the center. It's Christ who's at the center. I'm a branch grafted in by the grace of God to bear fruit. I'm not the center. It's okay to acknowledge the truth that white Christians are not at the center of the faith. It's more than okay. It is wonderful. It gives us a world's worth of amazing fruit from all across the earth. Christ has said, go and baptize and make disciples of all nations. And we did. Why would we want to go back? There is a world's worth of amazing sacred music. If we never ever had another piece of music composed by Europeans or white Americans played in this church, we would have enough music to last us from now till kingdom come. Praise be to God for the diversity of gifts in music. This is why, one of the reasons why we strive to include music from all over the world out of earnest appreciation and a desire to give honor to what God is doing through the Spirit. To give honor to the fruit that has come of following Christ's command. Don't get me wrong. What white people have contributed to the faith, it is substantial and beautiful, and I treasure those things. I love the theology of Soren Kierkegaard and the preaching of William Sloane Coffin and the hymns of Ruth Duck and Calvin Hampton and Marty Haugen. I love those things. They have formed me and inspired me, and also I know the truth. They are not the be-all and end-all. They are not the root and the trunk. We are branches. Branches of a living and vibrant olive tree. I am like a branch that has been grafted into something diverse and beautiful and wonderful, far greater than myself. The root and the trunk of that is Jesus Christ, a dark-skinned man from the poor parts of town. We have been blessed with the mission from God to go and baptize all nations. What a gift. What a gift from our forebears that this has been done. That we have the fruits of the Spirit from all across the globe. Why would we ever want to go back to before? Why would we ever? Thanks be to God for that indescribable gift. Amen.